exploring our oneness with spirit and each other. Unity Online Radio.
Thank you for joining us for Creative Spirit, Connecting Art and Soul with Reverend Maggie Oman Shannon. We'll explore the ways in which creative expression can deepen our spiritual connection and learn creative approaches to prayer and meditation. For those who already see themselves as being creative, this show will be an ongoing source of inspiration. For those who don't yet see themselves as creative, we'll lead you to new and empowering discoveries. Experience the joy of connecting to spirit through creative expression.
Good afternoon and welcome to Creative Spirit, Connecting Art and Soul. I'm your host, Reverend Maggie Oman Shannon. And as always, I'm recording this from Unity Spiritual Center on Ocean Avenue in the beautiful creative city of San Francisco. Each month, I explore a theme related to our creative spirit and the profound connection between art and soul, and how we can use creative expression as a tool for living a deeper, more meaningful, and more sacred life. To launch this month's look at creativity and celebration, I'm delighted to welcome today's guest, Sherry Richard Ballou. When it comes to celebration, Sherry has a simple philosophy: make moments into gifts. Life is extraordinary and fleeting, she says, and it is important to remember to be present to the people we love. It's also important to give presents that are all about the moments we share with friends and family. As the founder of Simply Celebrate, Sherry helps people appreciate who they are and the people they love through customized tribute books and other one-of-a-kind imaginative and impactful gifts, life coaching, and inspirational books and articles. And she encourages people to say it now and to celebrate now. To learn more about Sherry, visit her website at simplycelebrate.net. Welcome, Sherry, to Creative Spirit.
Hey, Maggie. Hi. I'm so happy to be here.
Excellent. Well, I'm really happy to have you here, and it's going to be a great conversation. We are recording this at a time when celebrations are beginning to happen all the time, you know, every day. And so we are going to look this month at creativity and celebration and how our celebrations and sense of celebration can be enhanced through utilizing our creative spirits. So because you've got a business that is all about helping people to celebrate events and their very lives creatively, I thought you would be a perfect person to talk to about this subject.
Ah, yes, one of my very favorite topics, as you know.
Excellent. Well, we will cover a lot of ground today. I'd love to start, though, by just kind of getting a sense of context for people's creative journeys and when they first started seeing themselves as being creative. So why don't you start there and just tell us when you started seeing yourself as being a creative spirit?
Yeah, and I love that question that you ask. And, you know, for me, it's interesting. I think I was actually a very creative child, but I never saw myself as that. And in fact, for many years, certainly all through high school and college, there was this longing. You know, I think I couldn't have named it at the time, but I would see people who were very self-expressive and, you know, very colorful and, you know, eccentric and creative, and would have this longing to be that kind of person. And because I didn't see myself as that kind of person, I had a lot of anxiety and depression. There was a, people on the outside would not have guessed it because I was sort of had this cheerful veneer. But, so for me, it's a really heartfelt question that you ask. And Very significant for me when I moved to San Francisco. I actually always resonate when you say, you know, I think you always said the beautiful and creative city of San Francisco. when I first stepped foot in the city, I came up for a vacation, and I remember the first thought, and this is crazy, but the first thought when I stepped in the city was, this is a place where a girl could wear hats. Because I always longed, that was part of it. I didn't have the self-expression through my clothes or in a lot of the ways that I wished I had. And I always had longed to wear hats. I wanted to be that kind of woman. And when I got to San Francisco, suddenly I started to become the creative. You know, I saw myself as the creative person I always wanted to be.
And how long ago was that, Sherry? When did you move to San Francisco?
I moved here in 1989, so right before that big earthquake, and about 25 years ago.
Yeah, so we share that in common. I moved here 20 years ago and felt the same way, you know, that it's a place where not only can you wear hats, but you can pretty much wear anything or nothing. I've actually seen people walking down the street completely naked, and it is. There's something about it that really does foster that sense of creativity. Isn't there? I love it too, and I'm still in love with it 20 years later.
I know. For me, it's like, it's one of the things that I'm most grateful in my life, that I feel like this city gave me myself, you know, in that way.
Beautiful. You know, and that's so interesting. And I you know, hadn't planned to go in this direction, but I kind of want to go with the energy of that question and ask you about the importance of environment, because I have found it true for me as well. The quick version of my story is that I was living in Indianapolis. I had moved there for a job, and I felt back in 1994 that I had to move to San Francisco or I would die. I mean, it was that strong of a feeling. Like, I had to be here. I needed to be here for reasons I didn't even.
Wow.
And, you know, and now, as I said, 20 years later, I'm still in love with the city. It feels like a person I'm in love with. My heart pitter patters when I fly, you know, over it, you know, in an airplane. And I'm wondering if you and I share the sense that in order to be fully creative, or in order to fully celebrate, we need to find our place, our right placement. Is there something in there for you too?
Yes, what a beautiful idea and something to explore. Because, you know, it's interesting. As soon as you said Indianapolis, I went to college in Greencastle, Indiana, which was about an hour from Indianapolis. And the school I went to, I thought we were all going to be sitting under trees talking about books and writing poetry. You know, it didn't quite turn out to be that. You know, I was actually really a misfit there. And it was an environment, at least in my experience, that didn't foster creativity. There was a lot of sort of, you know, people off in other directions that it didn't feel aligned with. And I had a writing professor who, I was getting progressively more depressed, and I thought it was just me. And he said, you know, it's funny you said what you said, because he said, I think you're going to die unless you get out of here. And there was a New York arts program where people could do internships at magazines, or, you know, in TV, or, you know, poetry journals. And he set me off on that path. And so when I got to New York, I suddenly was, I think I got that glimpse. Like, there was something about the color and the smells and the glamour and the, you know, wealth of creativity that I suddenly started to see, oh, you know. So it was my first taste of the environment really affecting. And I still was terribly depressed, because even more so in a way when I first discovered it, I was like, I want to be this so much. I want to be this person that's like inside of me, and I can't figure out how to get her out. Yeah. So it's really interesting, isn't it? But what I don't want to say, because it feels like, it feels like we can all find, I know you were talking, I was just listening to your interview with Susan Harrow, and you guys were talking about tribe. And in a way, I think we can find our tribe wherever we are, and that can be our environment if we can't get ourselves to the actual place that feels like it's our place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's true. I don't want people to despair if they can't live in San Francisco. And
right.
For many people, San Francisco may not be the place that would fully bring them forward, because I know a lot of people like to be in natural settings, you know, not urban settings, or, you know, it's something that each of us has to kind of find. It's like the perfect rich potting soil that's going to make us bloom to full potential. And that's going to look different for different people. But I really appreciate your comment that even if you find yourself in a place where you're feeling not completely at home or in right placement, the people surrounding yourself with your right tribe can offer a different kind of fertilizer for creativity.
Yes, yes, yes. I feel so incredibly grateful. It's one of the, I mean, I know that there are some downsides to the whole social media and the online world, but I feel so grateful. I have been connected to so many various, you know, individuals and groups of people that really nourish me as a creative person and as a spiritual person and as someone, you know, who just wants to really love my life. And I tell you, almost every day, I feel so grateful to where we are with technology right now. I mean, yeah, it's amazing.
It is, and it really does have, it has some downsides, but it also has some really amazing possibilities in terms of connecting people. And I know that you and I are you know, common members of particular online communities. And I've been in others where, you know, people from around the world I've never even met. And we were able to foster a real closeness. So, yeah, we do have many more opportunities that way to connect, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I want to kind of keep going with a little bit of understanding about where you got to be where you are now. And you had mentioned yourself, you had used the word spiritual. So tell me a little bit about your spiritual journey, you know, whatever you feel comfortable sharing, and how that spirituality started to become integrated with your creative life.
Yeah, because they are, to me, they're like, you know, one and the same sort of pinpoint of when it was a turning point for me. So, you know, I spoke about, you know, this depression that I had that sort of got more and more acute, particularly, you know, after I moved to San Francisco. I'd moved up here with a boyfriend, and when we broke up, it sort of catapulted me into a very dark place. And, you know, by some grace, as often happens in these lives, I was given a book by Zen teacher Sherry Huber.
Mm.
And that book led me to take a meditation class through her Sangha. And, you know, Maggie, I will never, ever forget. There was this moment in that first class. I mean, I walked in there feeling like this iron wall around me. Mm. And when I focused, you know, in-breath, out-breath, and I had this distinct feeling that there was like a relief from the pain that I saw. I saw that there could be a moment. And until then, I had thought it was like really solid. And that moment changed everything for me. I mean, it really, I started on that path of looking for moments. You know, so I would look for moments of joy or just these tiny little, you know, holding my cat and feeling her purr, or, you know, the taste of lime, just really simple little moments that felt like pinpricks of light to me in that iron wall. And that,
you know,
go ahead.
No, I'm sorry, Sherry, you finish. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, that's okay. I was just going to say, like, what happened for me then, of course, is that, you know, through continuing my practice and my work with Sherry Huber, was that I realized that I didn't have to just wait for those kinds of moments to fall on me, that was actually a practice. And that's why I say they kind of coincided. My celebration practice and my meditation practice really became one and the same. And I learned that I could, you know, really seek and create those moments of celebration, which really, you know, often are their moments of presence.
Beautiful. That's so true. And I didn't realize that does she still teach around here, or is she not teaching anymore? I didn't realize. I'm familiar with her books, but I didn't know she was actually out there teaching.
She sure is. Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
There's a monastery in Murphy's, California, not too far from here. And so she comes to the Bay Area, you know, infrequently, but she's here sometimes.
Well, I love that sort of connection between, you know, being aware of the present moment helps us to be aware of things to be grateful for or things to celebrate in our life. That's really lovely. And, you know, when you were talking about depression, I just was reminded of a phrase, and I can't remember which guest on my show said it because it was really profound. I wrote it down, but unfortunately I forgot to write down the name of the person who said it. But they said that expression, as in creative expression, is the antidote to depression. And I thought that was really profound. So I will at some point go back and listen to my own interviews to find out who said that, because I think that's so true, that there's something so healing about being able to creatively express oneself and how that can be an antidote to depression for sure.
Yes, 1,000 times over. I totally agree. And, you know, what I saw in my own practice and my own path, you know, I started seeing it because I had that image of that iron wall was so distinct for me in the pinpricks of light. I started seeing it as literally creating pinpricks of light. And when I made the turn from creating them for myself to, you know, creating them for other people, that's where the self-expression part really flourished in me, and where I felt like suddenly there was just this beautiful abundance of creative expression through, particularly through gift giving, but I use the word gift in, you know, in I think a different way sometimes than other people do. For me, there's many gifts just of being in the moment with people that we can see as gifts.
Mm-hmm. So let's go there. Let's find out. You know, you started talking about how present moment practice, meditation, helped you to see things to celebrate, but how did you make the journey from there to actually devoting your, not only your life, but your work to helping people celebrate? Tell us about that bridge.
Yes. Well, you know, you know how there's always like these wonderful like people or opportunities that come. And again, I have to use the word grace because that's what it feels like. But at one point, I was actually working as the executive director of a nonprofit, which I feel really good about and I loved. It was very meaningful. And I was completely exhausted. I had really burnt myself out. And I saw through the writing parlor that there was a class called Creating a Life Worth Living. And I wish I could remember her name now, Carol. I can't remember her last name. Mm-hmm. But anyway, she was way ahead of her time in that what she was teaching was way back in the 90s was, you know, instead of trying to fit yourself into boxes of careers that were out there, to actually look at what you most love doing and what you're so passionate about and creating a business out of it, which of course now, you know, this is a pretty common idea, but back then it really wasn't that common. And so I took that class, and I had one of those experiences that, you know, people talk about that this is so wonderful, of literally waking up in the middle of the night with an idea. A friend was getting married and she had said, "I don't want you to buy me a gift. I want you to make me something." And I woke up in the middle of the night thinking, I'm going to interview everybody in the wedding party and get them to send me photographs, and I'll like put together these stories and create, you know, this book for my friend. And it was totally just kind of a gift from, you know, where these gifts come from, the divine universe, God, right? Life just sort of handed me that idea. And so that's how I started creating, you know, the cornerstone of my work, which is these celebration books.
And how long have you been doing it now?
So I think that was back in the mid 90s that I started doing the celebration books. And it's been kind of a, you know, it's been kind of a curvy, I don't know if you've ever seen that graphic of like people's like life path where it's like, it's not this straight line, but it's this crazy spiraling curvy. That's how I feel. I've been doing the books, you know, I was doing them a lot. You know, truth be told, what happened is this is probably thanks to Susan Harrow too. You know, we just brought her up, but I was really good at getting editorial in publications because the books were very unique, and especially, you know, with bridal magazines, there were some like markets it was easy to do. But I was so not ready business wise. I didn't, you know, I had the passion and the creativity and the idea, but I started getting so many orders and got so overwhelmed that, you know, I sort of pulled back from it for a while. And that's when I wrote Simply Celebrate the book and sort of went in some other directions.
And have you ever thought yourself about being a celebrant? Have you ever thought about marrying people or leading, or do you lead rituals?
No, Maggie, I don't. And it's an interesting question because I'm so drawn to that. And I just have not. It's funny because just recently I was sort of talking to someone who does. I'm particularly drawn at this point in my life to end of life celebrations.
Mm. Wow!
And
yeah.
Just talking to someone who does that for people, and so it's interesting you should say that because these books that I create that are sort of, you know, to me what I always say is it's like what people say at a funeral, but people say it now. You know, there's those same kinds of, you know, why we love someone, the funny stories, the beautiful, like, memorable attributes. You know, that's kind of like what people do at funerals. You know, they're talking about all those wonderful, quote-unquote, ordinary but extraordinary things that we love about people. And so, you know, over the last, like, number of months, and I'm actually going to be testing this out in January with someone, is the idea of combining doing the celebration books and then also having a live event where we can bring together some the friends and have them read from the book and tell some of the stories. And, you know, the person who's the recipient, you know, can actually get to hear the stories live. And then they have the book as a keepsake.
Mm-hmm. Lovely. Yeah, it's such a beautiful thing that you do. And so I want to find out how you... And what I'm looking for here is not necessarily a heady or intellectual response, but just a little bit more layered understanding of how creativity helps us to celebrate. What role and what dimensions does a creative approach take us or give us when we're celebrating?
Oh, that's a great question. I love that. I love that. And the first thing that came, you know, dropped in for me was that when we're taking the creative approach, that there's, again, you know, I have to say, there's back to sort of a present moment. There's that present moment coming to life that we're totally here engaged in the moment. And from that, springs, to me, at least this is what happens, from that springs these ideas from life. And when we follow those ideas, you know, I found, at least in my own experience, that they're, like, always right on. You know, like, if I have an idea, you know, that drops in this moment when I'm thinking about my mom, and it's, you know, she loves books, and then an idea drops in of how to do, you know, create a gift around books. You know, there's just something that I think because it's creativity to me, there's really no separation between spirituality and creativity, and that it comes from whole mind or the divine or God. It comes from this place, wherever we've all come from, and it's bigger than me.
Beautiful. That's really beautiful. And it seems like, you know, just to use a simplified word, that it's about heart, isn't it? That there's a heart quality that is, no matter what the creative product looks like, you know, in terms of a aesthetic product, it's containing an element of heartfulness that you're just not going to get from a sweater at Macy's.
Yes. Yes. And there's some, you know, and again, this is kind of like your quote. I don't know who said this, but someone said that a gift from the heart is received with the heart. Mm. And I often think of that, that it's like, there's, this is going to sound a little woo-woo, we're in California, there's an energetic transfer of that love when we celebrate, you know, in these creative ways that are really, you know, truly from the heart, and, you know, we're being very thoughtful about the person that we're gifting. Something mm-hmm. else happens, something bigger.
Yeah, I think that's really true. And in fact, you know, when I was working on my last book, which was going to come out in 2017, I found a survey or a study from the American Marketing Association. I'm pretty sure that's who did it. And they were studying, you know, basically people's responses to something that has been handmade, or homemade. Mm. And they did find, you know, that the feeling was exactly what you said, that it contained some kind of energy, or that there was something inherent in the material being given that was like a product of the heart, that was something that could not be given in any other way, you know, by just buying something off the shelf. So I thought that was really interesting that even you know, the corporate marketing associations are studying this phenomenon that people really respond to that.
Oh, I love that. I hadn't heard that. That's really wonderful.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? So, yeah, we've got like 3 minutes or so before we need to take our break. But as we're recording this, I'll let folks know this is going to appear on in December of 2015. So, we are at the height of consumerism, of holiday shopping, and I know that you have thoughts about that. Why don't you share a few thoughts about this season of consumerism that we're now finding ourselves in?
Absolutely. I have lots and lots of thoughts about that. And hopefully maybe after the break we can talk a few specifics. But, yeah, one of the huge missions that I have with my work is really offering people a variety of different kinds of suggestions and possibilities and inspirations around how to give gifts that are personal and one of a kind. And many of them are no-cost gifts. Many of them don't take us, you know, that much time. There's a whole range of possibilities. But what I really love to talk about is just opening people up to the possibility of, you know, even during the holiday season, of choosing at least one or two people on their list to give a one-of-a-kind gift to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it could be a gift for us as well. One of the suggestions I made in this book I just referenced was based on something I did for my mom, which was on her 60th birthday. I made 60 slips, you know, little scrolls, little pieces of paper, and each one had something that I loved about her, which I know is probably very compatible with the kind of work that you do. And my mom passed away in February, and, you know, now those little scrolls have become a gift to me because I remember things that I'd forgotten. Like one of the things I mentioned on a scroll was that I love how you love watching Melrose Place.
You
know?
Oh,
and I completely forgotten about that. But that's a sweet after effect of making something for someone else, is that often it's a gift to you too, because it just reminds you of the special things that bring you joy about that person.
Yes, yes, yes. In fact, like I always say, that's the secret sauce of all of this. You know, what carried me out of that depression was, I think, partly the absolute joy that is, you know, it's impossible not to experience that joy when you're creating a gift like that. And then, like you're just pointing out, any time you revisit it, you know, and especially after someone has passed away, I have many gifts like that I created for people that are, I had no idea how much they would mean to me down the road.
Lovely. Well, we are definitely going to come back and learn more about that secret sauce, but we do need to take a short break right now. So please stay with us to hear more wisdom about the creative spirit and celebration from today's guest, Sherry Richard Ballou. We'll be right back.
If Unity Online Radio has helped you grow spiritually through programs like this one, please consider supporting this online radio programming. Visit www.unity.fm and click on Donate Now. Thank you for helping us continue to serve as the voice of an awakening world.
Just like life, grief is a journey, not a destination. Whether it is loss of life, relationship, security, or simply the process of change, have you given yourself permission to begin your journey of grief? Have you yielded to the gift of grace? Join Reverend Chaz Wesley every Thursday at 5 p.m. Central on a virtual navigation from grief to grace, and explore new horizons of empowerment, significance, and support. Only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
I'll light a candle in your name.
Do you experience the peace and joy promised by A Course in Miracles? Or are you still struggling to truly live your beliefs from moment to moment? Let Reverend Jennifer Hadley help you focus on your intent to be the love, be the peace, through practical application, by walking your talk. Experience the healing live every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Central on A Course in Miracles, Living the Love, Walking the Talk. Only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome back to Creative Spirit, connecting art and soul with Reverend Maggie Oman Shannon, where we'll explore the ways in which creative expression can deepen our spiritual connection.
Welcome back to Creative Spirit, where we've been talking to today's guest, coach, artist, and celebrant extraordinaire, Sherry Richard Ballou, about creativity and celebration. And just before the break, I loved your phrase, Sherry. You talked about the secret sauce. The secret sauce, that's a part of some of these practices that you help people to consider for gift giving. So tell us a little bit more about some of the things that you might encourage folks to do and more about that secret sauce.
Yeah, well, if it's okay, I'll start with the secret sauce, because I think that's something that is really important. So the whole foundation of this philosophy of celebrating, you know, especially by giving gifts of the heart. And to me, that when we're making any of these kinds of gifts that are really one of a kind and personal, where we're truly heart connected to the person we're giving the gift to, what we're really doing is we're scanning for what's good. We're scanning for what's working. We're scanning for the love and the joy and the happy memories. And what happens, you know, because, you know, unfortunately, I think our brains are still wired with that reptilian side of us to always be scanning for danger and for what's wrong. And so this practice of celebration in this way, to me, it anchors in all of these good feelings. So many of the gifts that I encourage people to make, have that secret sauce to them, that that what happens is we think we're making a gift for our mom, which we are, but actually we're the first recipient.
Yeah, that was definitely my experience when I went back through that 60th birthday present I had made her. You're so right about that.
Yeah, so that's like, I think, you know, it's really, it's great to have things like that. It's really potent, I think, in a way. So that what, you know, somebody else also said this to me, which I loved, which was, she said, you know, the kinds of gifts that you give, including the celebration books and the love list and all of these one-of-a-kind gifts, they're priming, it's like almost priming the pump, so that it's like what happens is they get us so filled with excitement and joy and love of this person that when the event actually comes around or the time that we're seeing this person to give them the gift, we're like so energized and full of love that it sets the tone way before we see them and creates an even deeper connection when we actually do see that person.
Yeah, that's really true. And speaking of loveless, I believe that you are very generously giving away a free ebook to our listeners. Tell us more about that.
Oh, I'd love to. So yeah, I love that you brought up the gift you made for your mom, which you and I had, we never talked about that. I didn't know you did that, but that's essentially what I call a love list. And there are many, many forms of love lists. It can be as simple as, I do a free printable that just, you know, is a piece of paper that people just fill out with all the things they love. Doing the scrolls like, that you did. I encourage people to make what I call a happy jar. They put those little pieces of paper in a jar that someone can pull one out per day. I'm currently promoting, my boyfriend has made me fortune cookie love lists. So he puts, you know, each I love you inside of a fortune cookie. And then of course, you know, you have to break them open and find it. And so that's another, you know, there's thousands of ways to do these. And so what I wanted to offer was that if anybody who's listening to this, anytime from now until eternity, creates a love list for someone in their life and they let me know, I will give them a free copy of an ebook called Present Perfect. And that book is full of all kinds of these different ideas. And, you know, hopefully we'll have time to share a few of them, but, I'd be happy to give away my ebook to anyone who creates a love list.
Oh, that's so nice of you. That's so generous. And I think I qualify, right? Because I told you about mine.
You sure do. Yes. Because also, you know, talk again, here we go back to the secret sauce. So you're like, oh, that's so nice of you. But it's not. Like, can you imagine what it's like for me when I open up emails from people telling me about the love list they've made? I mean, I'm just like, nothing makes me happier. So it's a gift to me as well, which is, you know, this is like another added benefit for me of promoting them.
You know, and it's interesting. I mean, not to take us into, you know, a more somber tone, but I just, you know, just before our interview, I was reading, gosh, and I need to get it exactly because it was referencing one of my mentors, a very beloved late mentor, Angelus Arian, and they were talking about her book on gratitude. And gosh, I wish I could remember exactly how they phrased it, but it was along the lines of, you know, the importance of gratitude that it can, you know, talk about it, energetic, you know, that it can really shift people's basic experiences of life. And when done on a collective basis, it could shift perhaps the trajectory of our world, you know, that it's so important to stay in touch with what we're grateful for, what we appreciate, that it can have, you know, a really generative and healing effect on not only our lives, but our world. And so I love how your work is starting that seed, you know, that it's, you know, getting people in that habit of thinking along those lines, and that really the potential for this kind of practice can be profound.
Oh, thank you for saying that. You know, and it's true, I hope. I mean, one of the things that I'm currently doing, a couple of years ago, I coined a phrase, the new Black Friday. So instead of, you know, the typical Black Friday celebrations of going out and shopping and, you know, people spending a lot of money they don't have. And I sort of started something where a virtual community of us, we get together and we make love lists on the day after Thanksgiving. And it's something that people sometimes do with their children. They do it with their friends. Obviously, they can do it from their own home. We just sort of share ideas on a Facebook group. But I have that experience when you were saying that, like, this community, there's a certain energy that builds. Even now, you know, we haven't, you know, it's not even Friday yet, but, you know, there's people jumping on and they're, you know, they're telling me if they're going to make the fortune cookie love list or they're going to make a joy jar, how they're going to, you know, they're going to get their kids involved. And it's just this, like, love fest.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, again, I don't want to, there's nothing wrong with, you know, buying material gifts. There's nothing wrong with that at all. And I never want to give that impression. It's just that there's a different kind of connection and meaning and energy that happens when we're doing something like this together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's, yeah.
Yeah, and you know what I'm thinking about too, and just to explain to the listeners that Sherry and I had the wonderful opportunity to meet and spend time together when we both attended Patty Dye's Life is a Verb Camp. And I've had Patty Dye on the show before. I've also had Marianne Rodmacher, who was a teacher there at camp and is going to be co-presenter next year. But what struck me all of a sudden, Sherry, is that, you know, I think one of the reasons why as a group of people, as a collective of people, we bonded so much is because it was this idea of appreciation that, you know, that was the, you know, that was the sort of social norm was expressing appreciation for another person, for their gifts, for their vulnerability when they were sharing. It was all about appreciating each other, and perhaps that's why, as a group, we all felt so close and still feel so close.
Oh, that is so beautiful, and I'm right there with you. I think you're right. I think that's a huge piece of it. And, you know, if I may, because actually it's one of the things I wanted to throw out to people, if you don't mind, and you just reminded me of the appreciation mailbags that we do at camp.
Mm. Yeah, say more about that.
Yeah, so it's an idea. Actually, it wasn't my idea. I got it from, I used to volunteer somewhere, and we would have these mailbags that we would put out, and people would anonymously, or they would sign them, they would just put notes of appreciation. Oh, thank you so much for, you know, the way you cheered me up today with that talk we had, or thanks so much for helping out with the mailing we did, whatever. You know, people would just toss in these notes. And I, the first time I went to camp, I put together the mailbags with everyone. Yeah. So we put, you know, everybody gets a bag with their name on it and people share appreciations. And it's fun because, right, you can do it anonymously or you can sign them. And it's an idea that then I then translated last year. I started offering it to people at the holidays to take into their offices or their home. You know, if you're having a gathering of people at your home, then they're going to be there for a few days or even just a day, or at the office, that you just, you know, you make, you know, I call them mailbags. They're basically paper bags and you can get crafts or colored ones or whatever and decorate them with their names or a simple name tag. But there's something about, you know, setting that up, you know, whether, again, if it's in your home or your office or in an event, that it just helps facilitate it. Because often that is part of, I think, what I've learned through my work is, you know, it can be uncomfortable. We're not really a culture that we learn to, you know, oh, Maggie, thank you so much. I love your beautiful spirit. That can feel a little bit uncomfortable in person. So to have things that facilitate that. And so, you know, I always offer the mailbags as a really simple, inexpensive way to give an experiential gift to people.
Mm. I didn't realize that you were the one behind that, but of course it makes total sense, and it is such a lovely practice. And as we're speaking, I'm thinking, wow, that would be a great thing to institute here at the church. You know, I mean, it was just so much fun, and I think there's something that's in some ways even more meaningful about the fact that the notes, the cards, the little tokens, you know, whatever it is that somebody leaves in your mailbag, it's kind of fun because, I mean, it's always wonderful to hear lovely words face to face, but there's something also really fun about kind of going in your mailbag and seeing what little goodies might have been left. So, I love the fact that you are the author of that.
You know, I think the other thing, and I feel the same way about any of these kinds of gifts, the love lists or the celebration books or anything where we're really putting into writing what we appreciate about someone, what we love about them, it can be hard to take in. It not only can it be maybe a little uncomfortable sometimes to say face-to-face, sometimes it's hard. There's sort of like an uncomfortableness in hearing these things. So when they're written, we have the opportunity to, like, you know, get home, get to a quiet space and really like take it in, or maybe we need to read them a few times. And maybe, you know, I've had a lot of people tell me when they're sad, they pull out their celebration books, or I've had people from camp, which I love when they say this, so I was feeling down, so I pulled out my mailbag.
Yeah. Beautiful. That's so beautiful. I really love that. And all of a sudden I'm starting to see lots of different possibilities for that. So
yes. And excellent. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because to me, you know, it leads us into that idea that it's like the word gift, you know, we often have this idea of, you know, it's something that we hand to somebody, but it can be like the mailbags are an example of something that is a true gift, but it's a little bit different. And in a similar way, I talk a lot this time of year, but it can be done any time of year, about what I call a hoopla, which is giving someone a day-long experiential gift instead of material gifts.
Tell us more about hooplas.
Yeah, I was going to say, wait a few minutes. So I can't remember how this happened, but my family, there's a clan of us on the West Coast, and then my mom and a bunch of other family members are in the Midwest, and the West Coast crew decided we just had had enough of all of the materialism and the consumerism of the holidays. So about 6 years ago, I think my son was 8 or 9 or 10. Yeah, about 9 at the time. We decided that we were going to create a day for people when we went to Ohio to visit our family. We would create a day of fun. And it started out the first year we did a carnival. So we had booths that we made, and we did something, you know, which you'll appreciate. We did a validation booth was one of them. So people would come up to the validation booth and we'd say, oh, we really love your blah, 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 or you're so great about blah, blah, blah. You know, so we would, that was the way we got sort of the appreciations in. But we also did magic and juggling. And then other years we've done spoofs on like the Survivor reality show. And we've done, you know, extreme gingerbread house making and treasure hunts. And one year we did a murder mystery. My boyfriend usually goes with us every year and he couldn't go. So we wrote a whole story around, you know, that he was killed off. And so it's a day of games and fun and creativity, you know, back to that we always top it off with a dinner. You know, we make a dinner for everybody. And it has become, you know, I just love that. It's become like a cornerstone of our family celebrations. Everybody knows we're going to be doing it. They don't know what we're going to do each year. And for us, it's, again, you know, back to what we were saying before, the secret sauce. We have the fun of planning it, you know, so it's that even before we go and celebrate with them, we're thinking about them, we're imagining how people are going to like it, and what are we going to do, and that kind of thing.
That's so much fun. That is excellent. So I want to kind of move, we've got, you know, just a few more minutes left, and I'd like to find out from you, because you're so obviously creative to me, and I loved hearing your story about you wanted to wear hats, and because now you are kind of like the hat lady, and I'm thinking about the wonderful photo that I've seen on some of your materials on your website of you in a leopard hat with rhinestones carrying a blue paper parasol. And we're wearing these wonderful woolen hand warmers. That's like so awesome and creative. So clearly, you know, it is something that you're embodying in many ways. But I wanted to find out, I always like to ask the question, what do you do to nurture your creative spirit? Are there ever times when you aren't feeling as creative? And if there are, what do you do to keep your spirit fresh?
Oh, and that's such a great question. Yeah, and it's funny you should mention my clothes, because I always say, you know, clothes are part of my spiritual practice. Clothes are celebration practice and spiritual practice, because it is one of the ways I jumpstart. And in fact, before we had this call, what did I do? I put on that same leopard hat, actually, because it's one of my favorites. And, it's kind of silly, right? Like, what are you doing wearing that hat in the house, talking on the phone? But what it does is it reminds me of my creativity and the celebration. And there's something that as soon as I start putting together a combination of clothes that delight me, something happens, you know, something shifts. And it's funny because there's a very popular book right now by Elizabeth Gilbert called The Big Magic. I don't know if you know of it, but
I've got it. Yeah.
She tells a story in there, and you'll see if you haven't gotten to it yet, but she tells a wonderful story about someone who does that or who did that. He would get all dressed up in his finery when he was feeling blocked creatively and sort of be like, well, I'm, you know, the muse is going to be more likely to show up if I'm like looking fine, you know?
Yeah. That's great.
So that's definitely. And the other thing that I do is that I have various friends who offer sorts of forums. What's coming to my mind right now is my friend Maya Stein, who's an amazing poet. And Maya does a Facebook group called Tuesday Typists, where she'll post a prompt on Tuesdays and people can respond. And it's very simple. I usually set the timer for 5 minutes and respond to the prompt, but it's enough to jumpstart. You know, sometimes I think, oh, 5 minutes, you know, nothing's going to happen. And everything happens in those 5 minutes.
Interesting. So that was a question I wanted to ask is what resources you would recommend in addition to your own work for people who'd like to show up more creatively, who'd like to celebrate more. So it sounds like Maya Stein is one. Are there other people who kind of inspire you or who offer good resources that you would recommend?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. And because I tend to be a lot of my creativity is sparked by words. I do tend to be more connected in that way. But so I'm immediately thinking, yeah, Maya Stein is an amazing one. Patty Dye, who, you know, we both mentioned as a mutual friend, I think is always an inspiration. My friend Lori Wagner, she does a fascinating class, but people, you know, you don't really need to take the class, but it's called Story Slices, where she combines photographs with just a sentence or two of storytelling, which is another thing that people could do on their own or with a resource like Lori to spark their creativity, you know, because a lot of people have digital, you know, cameras on their phones now. It's easy to just, you know, snap a shot of something that sparkles. You know, I'm always saying, like, look for sparkles in the world. And it's like if something sparkles a little, take a photograph of it and then just write a sentence or two about, you know, what it sparked for you.
Beautiful. I love that. So, and that may be enough for us. I know you just totally inspired me, but if you had, which you do, 30 seconds to say anything you want to our audience, what would you like to say to them?
I think the thing is that, you know, we are all creative. Like oftentimes, I actually just made a recording to my former self who was so lost and felt so out of, you know, couldn't connect with her creativity. And, you know, I just said to her, like, oh, if only you had known. And I feel like that's what I would want to say to people. Like, we are all creative. And I think that idea of seeking sparkles or, you know, what I call pinpricks of light, whatever it is that shimmers the slightest bit, that we give ourselves permission always to follow that, because that's creativity. That's like our relationship with life and with the creative spirit, and to really trust. I think that that's the thing, too. It took me a long time to trust that I could follow those little inspirations and intuitions, and that the real payoff is always in the moment. So it's like, you know, it's always wonderful to have a creative, you know, whatever we create at the end of it, but the experience of it is really, you know, what feeds us.
Mm. Well, that is beautiful. It's been so much fun, Sherry, and I just want to thank you so much for being my guest on Creative Spirit, Connecting Art and Soul, and for all the inspiration, the sparkles, the wonderful ideas that you've given us for creativity and celebration.
Oh, it's been such a joy. I love talking to you, and the show is just, you know, I think the show is creative, you know, and you know that too. It's like listening to you and to your questions and to your guests, it just brings me to life. So thank you.
Oh, thank you, Sherry. Well, I'm thrilled we had you on. We'll have you on again. And I just want to let people know that if they'd like to connect with our guest, Sherry Richard Ballou, please visit her website at simplycelebrate.net. To be entered for our monthly giveaway bundle, which will feature copies of books and products from this month's guests, including a spot in Sherry's Celebration Bookmaking e-course, plus a copy of my latest book, Crafting Calm, please join my Facebook community, Creating as a Spiritual Practice, and simply leave a comment about what you thought about our show. I want to thank you for listening. Join us again next week for another edition of Creative Spirit. And let me leave you with these words from today's guest, Sherry Richard Ballou. What's at the core of what I do is this. I want us all to remember that we have a choice to turn our attention to love and appreciation, even in our darkest moments. We turn our attention because we want to offer love and light to people we love, and in the process, we are transformed. This is why I always say that for me, celebration is a spiritual practice. It is about seeking and creating light in the darkness. This is also why I feel we shouldn't wait, because the light is needed now. Blessings to you on your creative journey.
Thank you for listening to Creative Spirit, Connecting Art and Soul with Reverend Maggie Oman Shannon. Join Reverend Maggie on Wednesdays at 4 p.m. Central Time and learn more about how creative expression can deepen our spiritual connection. Tap into the creative wellspring that is inherent in all of us. This program was brought to you by Unity Spiritual Center of San Francisco.
Have you ever considered that everything you think, say, and do is a prayer to the universe? What would your life be like if you activated the power of yes? Join Reverend Beverly Molander and her exciting guests on Affirmative Prayer, Activating the Power of Yes, to find out how they activated the power of yes in their lives, their communities, or even the world. If they can do it, you can too. Listen to Beverly Molander and her guests live every Monday at noon Central, 1 p.m. Eastern, on Affirmative Prayer, Activating the Power of Yes. Only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Thank you for tuning in to The Intentional Spirit, Seeing and Being, with Reverend Temple Hayes. Join us every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Central for tools and simple applications which will support you from being alive to fully living. This program is brought to you in part by First Unity at Unity Campus in St. Petersburg, Florida. To learn more about this ministry, go to www.unitycampus.org or www.templehayes.org.